Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. After almost 2,000 years of very serious conflict between Jews and Christians, the Catholic Church offered a palm branch of sorts to the Jewish people. During the Vatican II Council of the 1960s, they crafted a statement known as Nostra Aetate, In Our Time. In just over 600 words, the College of Cardinals acknowledged the Church's role in almost two millennia of antisemitism, agreed that Jews were not responsible for the death of Jesus, and gave respect to what they considered noble and ethical in every religion. It's now been 55 years since this document was released. We thought it would be a good idea to take another look at the history that led up to its creation, as well as how Judeo-Christian relations have held up since. With me to discuss this is Rabbi James Rudin. A little bit about our guest. He had a distinguished educational career at Wesleyan University, George Washington University, Hebrew Union College, and the University of Illinois. Rabbi Rudin served congregations in Kansas City, Missouri, and Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, and was an Air Force chaplain stationed in Japan and Korea. As a member of the American Jewish Committee's professional staff for 32 years, Rabbi Rudin serves as its senior interreligious advisor and a member of the organization's Board of Governors. He is a distinguished visiting professor of religion and Judaica at St. Leo University and teaches at Florida Gulf Coast University Renaissance Academy. So we welcome to Common Threads Rabbi James Rudin. Hello, Rabbi.
Happy to be with you and happy to be with the folks in Michigan, Grand Rapids, and sure.
Yeah, we're happy you're here. Let's start our conversation before the Declaration, or at least about that time before the Declaration. What led up to it? And obviously, World War II ended not long before. I gather from what I read that that is part of the inspiration. What else are we looking at in the landscape of Europe and the United States?
Well, first, let me update a little bit about who approved it. You said the College of Cardinals. That's a lot of cardinals did do it. It's even better than that. It was the world's Roman Catholic bishops who met over a period of 3 years from 1962 to 65. They didn't meet all straight through in Rome, but it was over those 3 years. So it was really a broader vote of than only the College of Cardinals. It was a vote of 2,221 bishops, and only 88 opposed Nostra at the end. So you had close to, 2,300 bishops. So it was a very, very strong vote. You ask a good question. Well, in 1960, it had been 15 years since the end of World War II, and you are correct that global conflict really changed the world, but it really put the Roman Catholic Church into a situation where it had to react. Look what they were facing. It was Nazism, which was defeated, communism, which was very strong at that time, fascism was defeated. There had been atomic bombs twice in Japan, hydrogen bomb. There had been the Holocaust, which was central. There was the whole rise of science, technology, travel, communications, and the Roman Catholic Church, which 1,900 years old, was faced with a real dilemma. Could it meet the challenge of the modern world, post-war world, or was it still back in pre-World War II vogue? And they were facing that challenge on a whole number of fronts. And there was also, when Pope Pius XII died in 1958, he was succeeded, and I want to make this as clear as I can. He was succeeded by his almost direct opposite in appearance, style, and ideology in many ways. And that was Giuseppe Roncalli, a cardinal, who is better known as John the 23rd. And John the 23rd faced all these problems. And he was considered, Fred, an interim. He would keep the bench warm, you know, until the real varsity players came in, till the next pope. To which I would say to folks, don't underestimate interim or those who fill in the blank or those who are substitutes or people they think can be just there for a little while. In the short time he was the pope, which was just 5 years, he completely revolutionized the Catholic Church and its relations with the modern world and with the Jewish people. So that's the background. They had to do something, and there was tremendous guilt, there's no other word for it, for what had happened during the Holocaust. One of the participants there was a bishop from Poland, Karol Wojtyła, who later became John Paul II, and he said the Holocaust happened in the heart of Christian Europe. Christians were participants, or they were bystanders, and in some cases they were victims. But the primary victims were the Jewish people, and 6 million of my people were murdered simply because they were Jews. So John the 23rd, who had lived through World War II, felt there was a need that the church had to face, look in the mirror and say, this is a new world. This is a challenge, and we cannot go on as we have. And that's why he called the Vatican Council. And you all should be aware, it wasn't just that the church took a really courageous stand on Jews and Judaism. It was they had to make a change about the modern world, science, technology, the post-war world. And they did make some changes. Nostra Aetate was so important, but you have to see it now, 55 years later. It was the foundation stone. You're exactly right. It was 600 and maybe 25 words in English. It was like the opening laying of the bricks for the building. And since that time, there have been many, many additions, many, many commentaries on it, many, many movements and forward. But it was a breakthrough. It was what the cliche would say, a game changer. It changed the relations between two of the most ancient religious communities in the world, Judaism and Jews and the Roman Catholic Church, which had a relationship for 1900 years that was often filled with, not always, but most of the time, with mutual suspicion, violence against Jews, incriminations, and a really unhappy relationship. And John the 23rd and his colleagues, and here you're right, many of them were cardinals, really wanted to make a permanent change, not just say some nice things, but really change, and this is the key, Catholic preaching and Catholic belief, Catholic teaching, and the way Catholics relate to Jews and Judaism.
Now, prior to the Second Vatican Council and the creation of Nostra Aetate, was there any effort on the part of the Jews to put forth this effort? I mean, was Nostra Aetate conceived of and birthed entirely by Catholics, or were Jews a part of the conversation even at the genesis of this?
Oh, wait, you're right. It was not just from inside the Catholic Church at the highest levels. There was an historic meeting now just about 60 years ago between Pope John the 23rd and a French Jewish scholar. I'll give it the French pronunciation and then the more English for more familiar. Jules Isaac was a intellectual, a professor. He was, before the war, he was the head of the French educational system. And he lost his family during the war. But during the war, he was making notes. It's incredible. Jules Isaac, about why is this happening? What is the Church's role, if any, in the Holocaust? And he met the Pope, and he had a list of things that particularly the flashpoints, I would say, that Catholics and Jews faced, Catholic attitudes. And he coined the phrase, which we still talk about, it says it all, that for nearly 2,000 years, he documented for John the 23rd that the Church embarked and continued for almost 2,000 years the teaching of contempt for Jews and Judaism. Not just that Jews were responsible for the death of Jesus that was carried out by the Romans, but in their teaching, Catholics, in their liturgy, in their preaching, sometimes in their songs, Jews were held in contempt, and the Jewish religion as well. And he was able to present that to a sympathetic pope. And he asked the pope, basically, what can you do about this? And it is said that John the 23rd replied to Professor Jules Isaac and said, you have the right to expect much more now from the Roman Catholic Church. And that was the breakthrough. And so this roly-poly, Giuseppe Roncalli, antithesis in so many ways of Pius the 12th, John the 23rd, had a remarkable idea. He said, let's open the windows of the Church. Let fresh air come in. And let's convene. He convened it. Something called the Vatican Council, which brought together all the bishops of the world who could travel there and begin to make some changes within the Catholic Church. And of course, in many quarters, both Jewish and general Christian community, and certainly in the Roman Catholic community, it's all documented. Well, they said, oh, what's this going to be, this interim pope? He's only here for a short time. He's a bench warmer. He's not a really varsity player. Of course he was. And what's this council going to do? Well, it made history. And so that's the origin, and it's a good question you ask. It wasn't just coming from Roman Catholics. It was coming from Jews as well. They took stock, and they took stock after World War II. And I won't use a profanity, but they said, what the heck happened? How did this happen in the heart of Christian Europe? How did the Holocaust happen? And what can we do to prevent it? And what can we do with the kinspeople, the blood relatives of Jesus of Nazareth? And that was John the 23rd's charge and his reason for convening the Second Vatican Council.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today is Rabbi James Rudin, and we are talking about Nostra Aetate, In Our Time, the Declaration of the Roman Catholic Church. Now, getting into the document itself, and Catholic teachings. Now, the charge of deicide, that is, killing God, that was never a part of official Roman Catholic dogma. Yet, of course,
exactly right.
The idea that Jews committed deicide was a part of the tradition, an unofficial part of the tradition. Would you agree that that was
absolutely
okay?
And the charge that was used was those two horrible words in English and in other languages. And Jews are Christ killers. And I heard it as a child growing up in Virginia from Catholics and other Christians, not just Catholics. So yes, you're exactly right.
So are you aware what was the official teaching of the Catholic Church toward Jews for most of the past 2,000 years?
I would have to say that Jules Isaac was right and the Pope John the 23rd agreed. It was, if the Jews don't convert to Catholicism, and there were many horrible efforts to force Jews to do it, and in many parts of the world, if they don't convert, well, we have replaced them. I think that's the, or displaced them. It was once described to me by a Roman Catholic priest, very sympathetic to Nostra Aetate. He said, when he was a kid in the U.S., he was taught that Jews were the necessary seedbed from which Jesus grew, which is true. But once Jesus and Christianity came on the scene, it was no longer needed. I'll put it in more space terms. Jews and Judaism were the launching pad for Christianity because, obviously, Jesus was a Jew, as were his early followers. And the authors of the New Testament, except for maybe the book of Luke. But once that rocket was shot up, to use my analogy, the retro rocket, which is Judaism, was discarded, wasn't needed anymore. So that was basically the teaching. And it got to be, if we can't convert Jews by reason or persuasion, then we could use pressure on them. And if pressure on them wasn't enough, like expulsion, exile, sometimes in terrible times, murderous campaigns against the Christ killers were undertaken in the name of the church. And the most notorious examples happened during the Crusades, when Christian warriors marched off to the Holy Land. They also were anti-Islam and anti-Muslim. But along the way in Europe, they would attack and pillage, rape, and murder Jews along the way to Jerusalem and the Holy Land. So that was the background. Now, I don't want to make it sound that it was always dark shadows and midnight and horrific relations. That was the general attitude and position and events. But there were sunshine and light as well during the 1900 years. But the attitude was Jews are surplus. Judaism is a surplus religion. It's no longer needed. And why are they still around? And why is Judaism still around? Well, it's an inferior religion, and therefore we, to use Isaac's great phrase, it's the teaching of contempt. And it had awful, frightening, horrific consequences. My own grandfather, who came from Roman Catholic Lithuania, on my mother's side, remembers as a small child, he was very young when he came here. He was about 13 years old. But he remembers as a small child on Good Friday in his town in Lithuania, Christians, in this case Catholic Christians, would come out of their churches filled with venom and hatred from the sermons they had heard on Good Friday. Christ killers, they killed our Lord, they killed our Lord and Savior, and on and on and on. And many times, as a little boy, He remembers groups and gangs going around the Jewish areas of his village, burning, raping, attacking, assaulting the Jewish community there, even though the groups had lived side by side for hundreds of years. And then it would subside for a while, but it was always there. And it would be inflamed by these teachings, which John the 23rd and other of his associates were keenly aware, the anti-Jewish teaching of contempt.
So I'm guessing that you could scour official church documents, papal declarations, et cetera, and you wouldn't find clear and distinct permission to actually do violence to the Jews.
That's correct.
But yet there was this meme, this mindset that it was not only appropriate, but encouraged locally, and somebody could rape, pillage, murder, etc., and not feel that he or she needed to go to confession.
Yeah, and more than that, it depended, of course, on the clergy, depended on the lay people, depended on the teachers. More than that, it was a necessity for some. I want to be very careful. It was a theological, religious necessity to denigrate Jews and Judaism, because Christianity was its successor, not its partner, but its successor. And when you replace somebody and need to push them aside, you have to humiliate them, and you have to diminish their importance. You have to attack their beliefs. You have to make it clear that these people really don't have a religion. They don't belong. They never did. Yes, they gave us Jesus, but once that was done, their role was over in the world. And that's dangerous stuff. That's poisonous. And there were some courageous people all through those centuries. And then we come to 1960, and then John 23rd not only had the meeting with a French Jewish scholar, Jules Isaac, he did something quite remarkable. He got in his limousine on a Saturday morning in 1960, where he was driven, of course, in his limo, about a mile and a half from where he lived in the Vatican to the Grand Synagogue on the Tiber in Rome. And many of your listeners have been there. And he stayed in the car, and as the Jews came out, he said in Italian, I am Joseph, your brother, because his name was Giuseppe Roncalli. And he didn't make that phrase up. He greeted the Jews by saying, I'm Joseph, your brother, which, of course, is from the Hebrew Bible, where Joseph reconciles himself with his brothers whom he's denigrated and who was harmed. And he finally reveals himself and says, I'm Joseph, your brother. Well, that's 1960. By 1986, 26 years later, another pope, a pope I knew quite well and met 12 times, actually, John Paul II, didn't just ride in a limousine and sit outside and greet Jews coming out of the synagogue. He went into the synagogue, and he gave a very, very monumental sermon in which he said, inside the synagogue, you are our elder brother in faith. So we're brothers, and by extension, brothers and sisters in faith. It was John Paul II who later also said that anti-Semitism, which means hatred of Jews and Judaism, is a sin against God. I want to repeat that. It's not just it's a bad thing, or it's ugly, or it's just vile, anti-Semitism, but it is a sin against God. So that's what I meant by that Nostra Aetate was the opening chapter of the book, which we're still writing but it had moved along 26 years. And by the way, I believe I'm correct that John the 23rd's coming to the synagogue was the first time since Peter that had happened. So it was extraordinary and revolutionary. And as we'll see, it created not only a new relationship, it created some problems for some Catholics who were not quite ready or not at all ready, and for some Jews who couldn't believe that this Roman Catholic Church, which had been so vicious in many ways, and where personal experiences, as in my family, was prepared to change its teaching, its preaching, its liturgy towards Jews and Judaism. So it was revolution. It should be understood by your listeners, Nostra Aetate and what followed and what has followed was revolutionary for both communities. It wasn't just for the Roman Catholic community.
Rabbi, we are out of time for this episode of Common Threads, but we have so much more to discuss, so I'm hoping that you'll be able to join us next week as well.
Sure, I'd be very happy to return.
And if people are interested in what you have written, and you have written extensively, I believe that much of that can be found at your website. It's James Rudin, and that's R-U-D-I-N, jamesrudin.com, correct?
Absolutely correct.
Okay, wonderful. I'm Fred Stella. You've been listening to Common Threads. Today, my guest has been Rabbi James Rudin, and we have been talking about Nostra Aetate, In Our Time, the document that created a dialogue between Catholics and Jews, and significant, very positive action as well. Please join us again next week here on WGVU, and we'll continue this conversation.